It's time for the PowerMizzou.com podcast with interviews and analysis of your Missouri Tigers. Now, here's your host, Gabe DeArmond.
Welcome back to another week of the PowerMizzou.com podcast. About halfway through fall camp, Missouri again had its second full scrimmage this morning. That is all covered on PowerMizzou.com, but what we're doing on the podcast for a couple of weeks is kind of looking around the rest of the SEC East, and we're going to stick with towns named Columbia to start. We're going to check in on the South Carolina Gamecocks. Chris Clark, sorry about that, from Gamecock Central, joins us. Chris, how you doing today?
Doing well, Gabe. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, thanks for jumping on. And first thing, we got to check from South Carolina. Give me Steve Spurrier's greatest fall camp hits so far.
He has done some things where he's been in rare form, which I don't know if you know.
Rare form for the ball coach is awfully rare.
Yeah, it's probably just normal Spurrier behavior. No, I mean, he gave an entire sort of monologue and told us at the beginning that he was joking, and he went on, you know, basically a fake rant about the team and how terrible everything had been, and just pointed out how coaches never talk that way. You know, they always like their team in the preseason and things like that. And then, of course, he keeps things spicy. He called a press conference with basically an informal media gathering on about 1.5 hours notice to, you know, basically talk about some things that have been printed about the team and sort of clarify his status. So that was more of a serious moment. But, yeah, he's had plenty of them, to be honest. I mean, he seemingly does every preseason, whether it's something like that, serious or something funny or just even something he's currently doing still, which is sort of keeping everyone in the dark about the quarterback situation.
Well, and I can't wait. I am shocked there has not yet been a Steve Spurrier social media reaction to Clemson being banned from social media. I'm waiting on that personally.
You know, Steve Spurrier actually had, I think it was in 2013, if I'm not mistaken, he had a social media ban, basically just a Twitter ban for his athletes as well, but that only lasted a year. So I guess he sort of changed his mind on that. I will say that the ball coach himself getting on Twitter was not something that I would have anticipated.
Yeah.
I understand why the football office did it, just to get him more of a presence out there and things like that. And, of course, he's not a very active tweeter. But, you know, to not have Nick Saban on Twitter and have Steve Spurrier is just a very, very interesting thing to me. He's not, you know, the most technologically, you know, savvy person you could think of. He always talks about reading the newspaper and things like that. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but he's just not someone that you would pick out to be on Twitter over Nick Saban, who's used, you know, social media and recruiting a lot.
Yeah. Before we get to talking about this year's team, talking South Carolina with Chris Clark from Gamecock Central, and the attitude coming off last year, I mean, everybody saw the SEC Network debut against A&M. They give up 52 points. Then Missouri comes back and wins a game they never should have won. They lose to Kentucky, lose to Clemson, end up 7-6. What was kind of not a disastrous season by any means, but not what Spurrier's used to at South Carolina. What was kind of the low point of that for you, for South Carolina?
Well, you know, Gabe, I will have to say, you said it wasn't disastrous, and I think maybe it's something Spurrier's clarified, from a record standpoint, maybe it wasn't really disastrous. You know, they end up winning 7 games somehow, and, you know, as Spurrier later would point out, that's not a terrible season. You know, you have a winning record, win your bowl game, and coming off 3 straight 11-win seasons, which had never been reached at South Carolina before, to turn around and have that was certainly disappointing. I think even more than the record was the manner in which it happened, to blow the game against Missouri, to blow, you know, the Tennessee game, to blow that one, Kentucky, to lose to Clemson, even though they didn't really blow that one, they just got, you know, soundly defeated. You know, all those things were really low points. I'd say, you know, the Missouri one was bad, and I think that really caused the team to lose a lot of confidence. As bad as the defense was, they played pretty well in that game for 3 quarters. I mean, they hold Missouri to a touchdown, and then they give up 2 in the 4th quarter. But I'd say the Tennessee game, honestly, was probably the low point. You know, losing to Auburn on the road, I think they were a top 5 team. you know, couldn't stop them, but nobody expected them to stop Auburn at that point. They knew Auburn was probably going to score almost every time down the field, but South Carolina's offense had a great night and still almost pulled the upset. But the Tennessee game was the lowest one. Tennessee, you know, has some players on offense, but their offensive line wasn't that good. Their left tackle was playing with a torn ACL, and South Carolina generated one quarterback pressure that night. They were up by two touchdowns with 4 minutes left to play.
Yeah,
there are multiple plays. They just tackle a guy. They probably win the game.
I'd kind of forgotten that game. I actually turned off and was shocked like 2 hours later to find out that Tennessee won that game.
Oh, yeah, they got a late touchdown, and it looked like, you know, everything was going to be fine for South Carolina, and they just completely, you know, imploded. And even in that Miami game, in the bowl game, they nearly did it again, but they just had enough to where, you know, they were able to win that one late. But, you know, they had a lot of close calls. They actually could have won a lot of those games, the Missouri game, the Kentucky, Tennessee. They could have had a lot better record but still been, you know, a mediocre team. Or they could have lost a couple more games that they were, you know, the Miami game, the Georgia game. They were fortunate to win those games when you look at it. And really, even if they would have won, you know, let's say they win three more games, they probably would have been the worst 10-win team in the country.
Yeah.
But
which is better than being the best 7-win team. But
you're exactly right that people look at your record at the end of the day. So.
Yeah. You mentioned the quarterback situation. Looking at the depth chart, sophomore Connor Mitch is listed as the starter. I mean, A, is that the biggest question mark on this team? And B, what do you think is going to happen over the next couple of weeks?
You know, I think it's hard to say that's the biggest question. The biggest question for folks is probably still the defense because, you know, look, the defense was extreme. It was just bad last year for most of the season, most situations. And there's a lot of reasons to feel better about the defense. Number one, you know, it seems like it'd be better by default, but you have a new play caller. You've got some upgraded personnel, some changes, things like that, that give you reason to believe that that unit could be improved. Now, how much? That's a key question. Potentially significant improvement, but we'll have to see. But, yeah, certainly on offense, the quarterback situation is one of the biggest. And, you know, it's one of the biggest on the team. I think South Carolina having, you know, a stable of running backs they can feel pretty good about, that helps. They return some pieces on the offensive line, and they're overall pretty healthy there, whereas last season they had a couple key injuries that really hurt them. They've got some questions at wide receiver, you know, aside from Farrah Cooper, who's going to step up there. But definitely – on offense, the quarterback question is the biggest one. And it's not just who's going to win the quarterback job. I think Connor Mitch is going to win the job eventually. He's the front runner. He's the guy that everyone expects to win. But Spurrier set the table for other guys to play. Perry Yord, former walk-on, he'll probably play some regardless. Lorenzo Nunez, the freshman, he'll play some as a change-of-pace guy, running quarterback. And we've seen in the past under Spurrier, when there's instability at the quarterback position, sometimes you see multiple guys start a game during the season, or you see guys come in and out of games. I think it's just going to depend on how it goes. But I do think Connor will be the first guy out there against North Carolina. It'd be an upset, which we have seen before, but it'd be an upset if it was anybody else.
Yeah, you mentioned Farrah Cooper. He and Brandon Wilds are names that most SEC fans probably recognize. Then a lot of names, probably a lot of SEC fans don't recognize at the skill positions, but how about their offensive line? I mean, three seniors, a junior, strength, question mark, how do you assess it?
Well, you know, honestly, and some people think this is a little bit crazy to say that, I think they could actually be better on the offensive line than they were last season. That's despite losing A.J. Cann, who was maybe the best offensive guard in the country, certainly one of the best, no doubt about it, at left guard, and then losing their starting left tackle, Corey Robinson. But they shifted Brandon Shell over to left tackle, and he could actually be an upgrade over there in terms of his athleticism and his, you know, ability, frankly. He could be an upgrade. Then they get Mike Matulis back. And Matulis was slated to be their starting right guard last season, had a really good preseason, and then went down with a knee injury before he even played a game. So then they had Cody Waldrop, who could play guard or center. He was banged up a lot of the season. So that left them with their third string guy at right guard. And they were playing a young guy at center, two undersized centers, one of them a true freshman. So, you know, I think it may be a strength of the offense. I think having those guys stay healthy is a key. I mean, they've got to stay healthy. They can't afford, I think, an injury to a starter there. But I think as long as, you know, they're all healthy, that they have a chance to be a good group. They're still breaking in a new guy at right tackle, Mason Zandi, who's been in the program for a while but hasn't really played significant snaps. He'll be a new guy on the right side. But Matulis has a little bit of experience. He's a fifth-year guy, and he's talented. So they return, you know, some key pieces, and it makes you think that they could be, you know, possibly better as long as they stay healthy.
Yeah, talking with Chris Clark from Gamecock Central about South Carolina, and you mentioned the defense. There's a Missouri tie-in here. That new guy they brought in is John Hoke, who actually was Missouri's secondary coach when I was in school about, I don't know, 18 years ago. I'm old. And he is taking over the play-calling duties and the defensive coordinator job. What, you know, just getting to know Coach Hoke and maybe seeing that defense in action a little bit, what have been your impressions of him?
Well, I think all the reviews have been very positive, and I want to sort of measure that by saying that things, you know, things went so badly. Everyone had such a bad taste in their mouth after last season that, you know, I think any change would have been welcome just in terms of trying something different, whether it was, you know, changing practice habits, changing scheme, getting some new players in, some guys shifting positions, having a new guy call plays. I mean, any of those things would have been welcome to try to just inject some life into the defense. That said, you know, it looks like South Carolina made a good hire with Hoke. He hasn't been a coordinator in a while, no, but he's had 13 years of experience in the NFL as a secondary coach. He obviously, you know, knows what he's doing at that position, and South Carolina has some young talent there in the secondary. But he's also worked, you know, he's well-versed in the game. I mean, he's worked under some very bright defensive minds in the NFL, and he hasn't tried to overcomplicate things. You know, that was probably a concern for some Gamecock fans when he came in, was he going to try to start running all this crazy stuff? But he's really focused on, as he says, technique over tactics. I mean, they'll run some different things. It's not like they're going to run the same coverage, the same call over and over. But he's really just focused on getting back to fundamentals, which really were lacking for South Carolina last season. So he's changed the scheme a bit. They'll run some true 4-3. They'll also run a nickel package, which will be a little bit different from the one South Carolina's been running the past few years. You know, he made some position changes, you know, shifting a guy, for example, from the spur position that was formerly employed to safety. You know, they also got in some junior college players on the defensive line that are going to help a lot. Some of their other linemen already on campus trimmed up. You know, just a lot of things that needed to happen no matter who is the defense coordinator. But all the reviews have been very positive. I mean, the players, Jordan Diggs, who's going to be their starting strong safety, you know, he told me after practice one day when I asked about it, he said he's a professional. You know, he's just, you know, very businesslike. He'll get on you. But he's just focused on just really playing assignment football and playing fast and playing with fundamentals. And I think that's going to be a welcome addition to the defense for the Gamecocks.
Just a couple more minutes with you, Chris. And anytime I look at what's a team going to do, what's the division going to look like, I think the most underrated thing is you have to look at everybody's schedule. I think most people think Missouri, Georgia, Tennessee are the three teams probably in contention for the East. Going in, I think Missouri's got the easiest schedule, then Tennessee, then Georgia. But when I look at South Carolina's schedule, I mean, these first 6 weeks, I don't think there's really only one game that anybody's going to look at and say, oh, man, that's a really, really, really tough game. But on the flip side, there's not one that I look at and say, well, that's an automatic win. I mean, they open with North Carolina on ESPN. They get an improving Kentucky team. They're at Georgia, Central Florida at home, at Missouri, LSU at home. There might be some wins there, but I don't think it's completely impossible to look at that and see a 1-5 type start for South Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. And this is how I've been putting it to people who, you know, everybody wants to know, well, what do you think the record will be? What's the best case? What's the worst case? And I always say this team could be significantly better than last season and still win 6 or 7 games or worse. And that's the truth. And it's just because of the schedule. Sad last season schedule, you'd probably feel better about them being able to turn it around from a wins and losses standpoint. I think if South Carolina won 7 games and they were just more competitive and the defense was better, people would be a little bit more okay with that. Again, it was just the way in which they lost those games last season that drove everybody to the brink, basically. But, yeah, I mean, the schedule never lets up. I mean, even the quote-unquote easier games, you know, Kentucky, North Carolina, people are looking past that game. That is going to be very difficult. Very difficult game. Some people may laugh at that. I don't. UCF, you know, it won't be the 2013 UCF team they saw with Blake Bortles and Ronnell Hall and Rashad Perryman, all those guys. But it will be, you know, a UCF team that'll be solid, you know, at Missouri. You know, they got to go to A&M. You get LSU at home, you know, which nobody's going to do jumping jacks about. So it's very, very difficult from start to finish. And
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to present a challenge, I mean, from start to finish. And, you know, I wrote a piece about it on Gamecock Central the other day where, you know, the defense is looking to make a drastic turnaround and get a lot better, but yet they have to face all these teams that just have a ton of weapons on offense, whether it's just having a lot of great individual players, whether it's facing a tough system like UNC or, you know, for example, Missouri, who runs an excellent system. They have a good experienced quarterback and have a really good offensive line potentially. So there's just challenges all up and down the schedule.
And what you never know when you look at a schedule, I mean, let's say things don't go well, there's some quarterback questions, whatever, and they start out, say, 1-5, 2-4. Well, then where's your confidence when you get to technically the easier half of the schedule, which still has at A&M, at Tennessee, Florida, and Clemson, you know? So, I mean, you just never know where a team's head's going to be at 6 weeks into a season.
Yeah, exactly. And again, sometimes you get those turning points where that Missouri game, I'm convinced, really, really hurt the team. And I don't think I'm just making that up. You know, a lot of people around the program talked about that game last season as just being just a blow. I mean, it just really hurt to lose that game like that. And history sort of repeated itself later in the season with the late game meltdowns. And it wasn't always the same story, but it was a lot of fourth quarter meltdowns offensively or defensively or sometimes both. Yeah. And so I think they're going to have to stay competitive, you know, to be able to carry over that confidence, because there are going to be bumps in the road during the season, whether or not some of those may be smaller things that happen during a win where they have to face adversity, or some of them may be just, you know, taking a loss on the chin. Because you know, you can't realistically look at this schedule and think that South Carolina is just going to, you know, just roll through it, even if they're drastically improved. Like I said, they could be improved on defense, still have a pretty good offense as a step down from last season, which is probably what most expect, and still just have a really tough time in the wins and losses column.
Yeah, last one for you, Chris. I was a little surprised at SEC Media Days to hear some of the talk. Listen, nobody is going to mistake Missouri, South Carolina for like Auburn, Alabama, some of the historic rivalries in the SEC. But given the way the last two games have gone, and just the impression I get is this is one of those kind of underrated, boiling under the surface series that could really get pretty entertaining and pretty heated over the next few years.
I totally agree with you. And I saw it late in the game last season. You know, Missouri had stumbled through most of that game. They didn't play well offensively. You know, I know if we would have asked any of the players right now, if we called and asked them, they'd say, yeah, we really should have played better in the first three quarters. But they found a way to get it done. And you could tell when they punched in that last touchdown and extra point that put them ahead by one, Missouri really wanted that. And they were, I think there's a relief and a happiness because of what they suffered the previous season against South Carolina. I don't think there's any doubt about it. So there have been a couple down-to-the-wire games, SEC East team coming in Missouri in the past few years. So I totally agree with you. I think that is one of those potentially underrated rivalries that may get going soon, especially if there's going to be some of those, you know, classic down-to-the-wire games in the next few seasons.
All right, Chris, appreciate it, man. Have fun the last week and a half of camp, and we'll look forward to talking to you down the road.
All right, Gabe, I appreciate it.
Chris Clark, GamecockCentral.com. Appreciate his take from the other Columbia. I'm sure people in that Columbia call this one the other Columbia. But Missouri-South Carolina, really a rivalry that I don't know if rivalry is the right word yet, but a series that I think could be a lot of fun in the coming years. All right, going to turn our attention now with SEC East preview number 4 to Nashville, Tennessee, and the Vanderbilt Commodores. Welcome in Chris Lee from VandySports.com. Chris, how you doing, man?
Excellent. And you, Gabe?
Doing all right. Appreciate you taking some time. Okay, so this is the breaking news edition of the PowerMizzou.com podcast. Chris, go ahead and lay it on us. Big depth chart shakeup issues in Nashville right now, huh?
Yeah, big news item for Vanderbilt today. Not a good one. Left tackle Andrew Chelks, who was really highly recruited and has been a starter for 2 years, done for the year with an injury. News just broke this afternoon, but to add to that, they've already lost C.J. Duncan, who's their top wide receiver from a year ago and a pretty good player. And that offense, I think, struggled to score. I don't remember the number, but if you take away the defensive and special teams touchdowns from a year ago, it was about 11 points a game. So losing, I'm going to say, two of your best three players, Ralph Webb would be the other one, and of course, the quarterback situation, we don't know that's going to be. Whoever wins that may be one of the more important players, but that's at least two of their top four players on that side of the ball who are gone.
And to be kind, this isn't losing two of the top four players off like a 10 or 11 win team that was one of the best in the SEC to begin with.
No, this is losing two of the top four players off an offense that, even with them and with everything going right, was really going to struggle to score. Look, Gabe, the impetus for wins was going to come on that defense, and, boy, it's going to be even more that way now.
Could year one of Derek Mason's tenure, could there have been things that made it go worse than it did?
Are you asking me if something could have happened to make it go worse?
Yeah.
I suppose a meteor could have fallen from the sky and wiped out the stadium, but other than that, not really.
Yeah, yeah. Is there a turnaround in sight? I guess what marks a turnaround this year? I mean, you know, is it a bowl game a possibility? Is it just win 4 games? Is it just be more competitive? What marks a turnaround?
You know, I think it's two things. I think it's look competent. I think fans are sort of understanding now that they are in a bind for offensive talent. They just don't have any. And that's above and beyond anything with the coaches. I think it's obvious now. They just don't have the parts right now to do much offensively. Gabe, the way I judge football teams, to me, it's not do you win and lose. I mean, you might get a 1-0 for beating Presbyterian by 70 points, but I'm more impressed if you've got an 0-1 and he lost to Alabama by a field goal. I think, to me, nobody expects him to do great things this year, but they want to see some kind of hope that they are headed towards a right future. I think if they are competitive in their games, they don't lose to the wrong people. The wrong people would probably be Western Kentucky, Middle Tennessee State, and Austin Peay. Then I think if they look like they're competent and they provide some hope for the future, I think that's the first thing that people look for. Secondly, if a bowl is at all a possibility, I think it's very slim. You look at the 2008 team, which was long before Missouri was in the SEC, but the offense was lousy. The defense was pretty good. They were really opportunistic on turnovers, and I think they were minus 16 there a year ago. Those things tend to come back to the mean, and if they do and they can catch some breaks, I think winning ugly is going to absolutely be the blueprint, for them.
All right, just so people don't think that Chris is playing gloom and doom, and I am piling on Vanderbilt. I mean, last season featured 3 wins by a field goal over UMass, by a point over Charleston Southern, and then 42-28 over Old Dominion. It featured a 51-0 loss to Mississippi State, a 34-10 loss to a Florida team that I'm not sure scored 34 points in the rest of the SEC schedule, a 27-point loss to Georgia, a 38-point loss to Ole Miss, and then the 37-7 opener to Temple. I believe that was on the SEC Network. And Chris, I've talked to people not obviously at Vanderbilt, but outside the program, who the most stunning thing that I think I saw in SEC football last year was Derek Mason pulled his quarterback in the second half of the first game. I mean, didn't that just kind of signal, hold on, we're not very settled and we don't have a direction here. I mean, at some point you got to pick a guy and give him a couple weeks, don't you?
Yeah, that game was kind of the blueprint for their season. I mean, they went, I want to say they were -8 in turnovers in that game. It might have been -6. It was a huge number. You had the quarterback turnover. You had the rainstorm where it didn't start till 10-something at night. I mean, that just was kind of the harbinger for what was ahead. It was just an ugly, ugly season. And the lack of stability at quarterback was just one of the many things that kind of marked what was a disaster.
All right, now I do want to point out a positive here. Defensively, I think probably fair to say Caleb Azubuike, best player on this team, right?
I think, honestly, it's Stephen Weatherly. Okay. And that's not a name that a lot of people know, but they probably need to. He was a kid that came there out of high school as a receiver, is one of James Franklin's recruits, and they've turned him into an end. And they turned him loose in that Tennessee game. Derek Mason actually took over the defense and was a coordinator for the first time all year. And you look at that game, and they played Tennessee down to the wire. Vanwell actually had a small edge in total yards and lost by a touchdown, which was a special teams touchdown that really decided the game. But Stephen Weatherly in that game was brilliant. I think he had 5 tackles for losses. It was the first time they really turned him loose all year. He's probably my pick as their best player. But, Gabe, I'll tell you this. They do have some talent on the side of the ball. Go back and look at some of their starters and where they got offers. And those guys had a bunch of SEC offers among those starting 11 on the defense. They were some really, really highly touted high school players. I think a year ago, the coaching from that defensive side of the ball was so bad and so disorganized, it obscured absolutely everything that could have been good about them. I think the hope is now that Derek Mason is coaching that defense, they've got the talent to be fairly good there, and a mind that's done it at Stanford, I think they could actually be decent on that side of the ball, if not good. And it's going to be through a lot of names that people may not know, but don't let that fool you. There's some good players on that side.
All right, just quick look at the schedule. We just got done talking with Chris Clark about South Carolina, and their schedule is, I mean, it's tough throughout, but really the first 6 weeks are brutal. I think looking at Vandy's, it's probably the opposite. I mean, in the first 6 weeks, you get Western Kentucky, Austin Peay, Middle Tennessee. Then what probably is a real swing game, if they're going to have any chance at making a bowl, at South Carolina, before the second half has Missouri, at Florida, A&M, at Tennessee, you know, probably the tougher second half. Now, I understand Georgia and at Ole Miss in those first 6 games are not easy, but just looking at that schedule, Chris, I would say the recipe is win the 3 you know you're going to win, pull an upset somewhere, and maybe get some confidence going in and trying to pull out a couple in the second half?
I think that's not a bad blueprint. I mean, the only give me on that schedule is Austin Peay, which is not only an FCS team, but a terrible one. I think they lost their average game by, I think it was 44-8 a year ago. I mean, they were really, really bad. That one they could win in their sleep, you know, 10 minutes before kickoff. I think Western Kentucky in the opener is going to be a tough one. The line on that almost right now is a pick'em. They've got a quarterback that is a 6-year through for about 5,000 yards a year ago. So watch out for that one. Western won its average game 44-40 a year ago. There should be some points in that one. I think MTSU is a chance for a win. That one's on the road. That's a program that's given them fits traditionally. You know, maybe you can pick up a win, Kentucky and Nashville, perhaps at South Carolina, because I think we're all trying to figure out what they are. Now, they're not going to win all those games by any stretch, but if you're looking for some crazy stuff to happen, I think that's the most logical place for the wins to come from. And, oh, by the way, that game at Houston – might be winnable too, although Houston's not a bad team outside the Power Five.
Well, I don't root against Vanderbilt. I like Vanderbilt. My son does. I will, however, root for Austin Peay to at least do a few good things so I can hear the Let's Go Peay chant on TV, because I'm like a 7-year-old and I find that funny.
You know, I cannot sit here and tell you I've never laughed at that before myself, Gabe.
Last thing for you, Chris. What if this year's a repeat of last year? What if they're 3-9, they're getting blown out, Is Derek Mason in trouble after 2 years?
You know, everybody likes Derek Mason. I've still yet to hear anybody say a bad word about him personally. Even the people that have been fiercely critical of him like him. And that's always going to buy you some goodwill if it's kind of a middle-of-the-road call. But, Gabe, I don't think if they're as bad as they were a year ago, I don't think they can stand to keep him another year. I mean, Vanderbilt has been excruciatingly patient with its coaches. But you look back to Rod Dalhauer in the mid-90s, and people knew that one had to end after a couple of years, and it did. I think when it's obvious the coach has got to go, they'll end up making that call that he does. My hope for him, just personally, is that that's not what happens. But again, what's happened to them in offense and camp so far really is not helping them at all.
All right. Well, Chris, appreciate the time, man, and be keeping an eye on things in Nashville and talk to you down the road.
Thank you so much, Gabe. Always a pleasure.
Chris Lee, VandySports.com, does a really nice job covering Vanderbilt. And Vanderbilt's like the Iowa State of this league. Nobody roots against them. I mean, their fans are real nice. It's a good, small, different place to go to a road game. Nashville's a great town. But, boy, it was rough last year, and it's probably going to be pretty rough again this year, especially with a starting wide receiver and a starting left tackle out for the year. Once again, Missouri's scrimmage earlier today. We've got full coverage on PowerMizzou.com, but did want to keep the podcast on schedule. Checked in at Tennessee and Georgia last week, then at Vandy and South Carolina today. Next week, we will hit Kentucky and who am I forgetting here? Florida. Hit Kentucky and Florida next week, and that will hit the full SEC East, and then we'll be game week, folks. We are 16 days from the season opener in college football. So we will be here every Thursday on the podcast. Thanks for listening.